Welcome to ChatBiz number 8, 19th of November 2012. Sponsored by Creed Media, who specialise in visualisations and animations of concepts for architects and engineers. They also photograph and film work sites, prepare all types of multimedia and technical publications. Their website address is www.creed-media.com. That's CREAD-MEDIA.com. Today we'll be talking about local authority procurement with Alan Wilkinson of WPP Architects and Ethelene Lemming of Gemstone Education. We'll also have Dave Baker of Charting Success and Karen, who will be hosting the show. Now for the news. Slow payers. During a debate in the House of Commons this November, it was stated by Stephen Metcalfe, MP for South Basildon and East Thurrock, that all public bodies in receipt of taxpayers' money should be signed up to the Prompt Payment Code. He said billions of pounds were being withheld from the economy by some of the organisations who have the deepest and largest pockets. It would be an effective zero-cost way of providing a boost to the economy. Labour MP Debbie Abrams wrote to all the Financial Times 100 share index companies who have not signed the Prompt Payment Code. Of the 75 Financial Times Shares Index 100 members who received the letter, 60 did not respond. 4 said they would not sign the code, and 1 sent a holding letter that was not followed up. Sainsbury's, one of the firms that refused, subsequently extended its payment terms to 75 days. For the government, David Willetts said, "We absolutely understand that when we talk about finance for business and we have the endless ingenious schemes for encouraging bank lending and access to finance from the city, one of the best forms of financing business is just to win contracts and get paid for them." NHS procurement issues. A recent assessment by consultants Ernst & Young has highlighted the variations in prices paid for a range of medical products. They looked at 10 NHS trust hospitals out of 166 and found that the same box of medical forceps ranged from £13 to £23, and for an identical box of blankets the lowest price was £47, the highest was more than £120. This reflected the research published by the National Audit Office earlier this year, which calculated that the average variation was 10%. Although in more than 5,000 items, the variation was above 50%. Now, over to Karen to talk about local authority procurement.
Hello and welcome to chatbiz.org. With me today, I have got Alan Wilkinson from WPP Architects Limited and is a member of the REBA Suffolk. I have Ethne Lemming, who has two companies, Gemstone Education and Ethne Lemming Associates, and David Baker from the Federation of Small Businesses, and he is the Deputy Chair for Suffolk. Hello and welcome to everybody. Now, today's topic conversation is about local authority procurement. And I will put my hand up and say it's not something I have actually touched. Because once you start reading the paperwork, it is a minefield. And for a small business, I think it's quite a challenge to do. Now, Ethne, your business is based on education.
Yeah.
Can you just tell me a little bit about that?
Well, Ethne Lemming Associates is really a sole trader company, and it focuses on school improvement services. Gemstones has a slightly different education focus, and that is really for helping schools with children who have a particular set of emotional, social and behavioural needs. So there's two separate businesses there, but they're both linked in terms of education and servicing schools and local authorities.
So you're directly involved with the local authority procurement process?
Yes, I have been, yes.
And are you only Suffolk based?
No, it's rather something I'd like to change. But at the moment, the contracts that I've been able to win are both outside of Suffolk. So it means that I have got very little work actually contracted in Suffolk, except what we're beginning to pick up with Gemstones, which is a straightforward school procuring our service. So it's not the local authority yet, but I'd like it to be.
Right, that now totally confused me, because as far as I'm concerned, the school is local authority. Are you saying that the schools stand independent of local
they
authority?
They do. And I think that's part of what makes the whole kind of education sector very complex. So schools, particularly if they were academies or free schools, will be quite separate from the local authority. Schools have had their own budgets for, I would say more than 20 years. And although they have to follow the same procurement regulations as local authorities, if it's a certain amount of, money, if it's quite a high amount of money, for kind of small amounts, they are able to deploy their budgets as they would wish.
Right. Well, that's quite interesting. Mm. And Alan, you're an architect.
Yes.
Slightly different, but still local authority procurement for you?
Yes, for our practice and for many architects, local authorities have traditionally provided a lot of our work and a lot of commissions. I was very interested actually in what Ethne said there about how you don't have any commissions with the local authority in Suffolk, but you have commissions outside. That exactly mirrors our experience, where our local authority contracts since 2005 have been outside of Suffolk, although we're Suffolk based. Except where the schools are purchasing our services
directly.
So it exactly mirrors Ethne's experience there, yes, because the schools do have that independent budget, greater now than they did maybe 5 years ago. You know, it's increased independence.
And so your contracts now are out with Suffolk, and what type of work are you requested to do from the local authority?
Mainly designing schools and other education establishments, preschools, nurseries, higher education. But that might be sort of a refurbishment, it might be new building and so on, and a variety of sizes. But we also do other sort of local authority funded projects, might be projects in parks or museums.
So you cover the whole spectrum rather than just education?
Yeah, the local authorities built portfolio, if you like, their property portfolio we would be dealing with as architects.
David, as an FSB deputy chair, what involvement have you had with local authority procurement?
I think our involvement is really on the lobbying side, and what we're trying to establish at the moment is really some measurement criteria, because it's like anything else, it's a very simple equation. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And our contention with Suffolk County Council and many of the other councils is they don't actually know how much business they place with local companies. Well, if you don't, as a start, know how much you're doing, you don't know what you need to do to improve it. And so really our initial fight is to get them all to measure what they're doing, so that we can actually find out how much business truly is done with local companies and small companies.
I do believe there are some councils that actually have done quite a good measurement and have actually set quite a good template.
Yes, I mean, one of the ones that we've looked at really is a model is Rotherham. Rotherham actually do publish statistics, very accurate statistics, of the amount of business that they do with local businesses and the size of the business that they're doing that work with. And they publish a very clear guideline as to how businesses should attempt to find procurement contracts through the council. And what we hope to do is to get the local councils here to adjust their procurement strategy to match something similar to Rotherham's, really. Mm. The other interesting thing about Rotherham is that they have said, since they have been doing that, so since they have actually been measuring it and specifically saying they want to do business with local companies, they have actually reduced their procurement bill.
Now that's interesting.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. And what do they class as local?
I'd say I don't know that absolutely. I mean, I think they do on their website have some specifics in terms of their postcodes, but I haven't gone down to look at that in great detail.
Right. I think that it's a link we could possibly put up on the chatbiz.org site.
Yes.
For people to go back and have a look at and see. Now, I have done a little bit of research, and I will say that when I went through, I obviously, you know, I'm a Suffolk-based business, so I went on to Suffolk County Council, who have got a Suffolk County Council Procurement Regulations of 2011, and went through this, and one of the big things is trying, now, you know, I'm a small business and I only have a few employees. I have got some things in place. What I don't have in place is some of the standards. Now, you know, I don't have the ISO standards in place. Because it's a very small business, I do have the systems, but I've never gone to actually spend the money and get that in. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I did find quite interesting is, you know, the value of the goods, the total aggregate value goods and service. I will say some of the wording is not the easiest to follow. And what they say the value of the works are for the thresholds and the process to be used. So they don't even have just one process. They have a multitude of processes. Now, Ethne, what was your experience of these different processes? Because I think you had a bit of a challenge.
Well, I did. Both the contracts that I won January through to February, March times, with two local authorities, there was a definite process. But what they didn't insist upon were things like, if you were a small business, you didn't need some of those particular requirements. So there were things that I did have to do. I had to write my own health and safety policy, which when you're a sole trader, it may sound a bit silly. I had to write an environmental impact policy. I had to obviously have insurance of a certain level. So as long as I ticked boxes that were essential. Mm-hmm. There were some like that they'd put in for larger businesses, but basically if you were a sole trader, then you didn't have to tick all of those boxes.
Right, so some local authorities have been very sympathetic to small businesses. Mm. It sounds like to me that they were actually trying to encourage small businesses.
I think that was right, because the ones that I won, I'm thinking about one in particular, it had a very large company providing services, school improvement services, and essentially for, you know, I don't know the rights and wrongs of it, but they were not happy with what had been provided. And it was a very large multinational company. And they really wanted to take a bit more control of it and have something more flexible, actually. So they particularly wanted to encourage people like myself to apply and to win those contracts. So they were very sympathetic to sole traders, for example. Right. And they were really looking for individuals. And although you could put forward your proposal and subcontract, so it could be more than one of you providing the services. Mm-hmm. It certainly didn't have to be. And I think I can say in all the cases of the people working with me in that particular local authority, that we're all in effect sole traders and we're all providing those services separately.
Well, that certainly makes you feel a lot more, you know, comfortable as a small business as to actually going into that sort of process. Was it very long-winded?
It was. I sometimes look back and I'm surprised that I wasn't put off, really.
You're tenacious.
I think, yeah, and I was even surprised that, you know, I am tenacious by nature, but I was surprised how well I stuck with it, because I was having to do both almost simultaneously. And it was a huge amount of work when you work for yourself. Doing two of those, these PQQs you have to do first. And
okay, you've just done an anagram?
Yeah, I have.
PQQ is...
Now, do you know what? I can't even remember what it stands
for. Pre-qualification.
That's it. I mean, when I first heard that, I thought, I have no idea what you're talking about. Mm. So there are a lot of acronyms being used for which, you know, I really didn't properly understand what they meant. So I guess it took me a long time to even work out what some of these things were. Mm. And so looking back now, I'm surprised that I carried on with it, really.
Well, we're impressed. Mm. Now, Alan, you've had a completely different sort of experience as far as the local authorities seem to not want to have a sole trader. They seem to want to go, instead of having an architect do the design and then go out for procurement to the subcontractors afterwards, they seem to jump a step? Or is that just my interpretation of what they've been doing?
How do you mean jump a step?
They go straight to the builder.
Oh, okay, yes.
Hasn't got the designs, the plans, materials, etc.
Yes, I think what you're talking about there is what's called design and build procurement, where the contractor is appointed at a certain stage in the process and either carries out or completes the design as part of the package. That's an increasing trend in local authority procurement, which means that unless you happen to be engaged to do the feasibility work at the front end, the architects would generally be working for the contractor in that. Whereas with traditional procurement, the client would appoint the architects and the rest of the design team to develop a design and then tender it competitively.
Which is how I would imagine the work would be done, because how can you appoint a builder until you know the builder is qualified and fit to do the design?
Yeah, well, they have all sorts of criteria and hoops that the contractors have to jump through to try and ensure that they're getting, you know, competent contractors, of course. But it's really all about offloading risk, so that a lot of the design risk then rests with the contractor rather than with the client organisation. People have various views about the success of that. My own view is that you can't beat the traditional route, achieving quality at a sensible cost. Mm. But in this climate of, you know, cost-cutting, people are looking for the cheapest route, not necessarily the best result in quality terms.
And if I was a small practice, would I be picking up work easily with local authorities, or would it be the larger practices only who were part of this packaging, shall we say?
I would say that for small firms, and I'd include mine in that, because there's seven of us, you would find it much more difficult than it used to be. Increasingly difficult, and increasingly large corporate firms are scooping up the work. And there's an interesting debate about, you know, you mentioned a large firm doing the work that you now do, about the large organisation's ability to deliver the sort of quality of service. The easiest example of that is that when they appoint a firm like mine, they get the A-team on every project, because there is only an A-team.
Yeah.
You appoint a large organisation, you might get a slick presentation at the front end, but actually you'll get the B and maybe the C team actually doing the job. And so, you know, that's a bit simplified, of course, and I don't want to be unfair to large practices.
No, but I do. And I'm not trying to, where you're coming from.
I'm not trying to exclude them from the process. What I'm concerned about is the increasing exclusion of small firms because of the difficulty and all the obstacles you've touched on, some of them already, placed in that procurement route, and how hard it is for small firms to actually jump through the hoops.
It's interesting, David, because, you know, you represent 2,500 members in Suffolk.
Correct, yes.
And it'd be interesting to know what our local county council would say is local and what percentage of the work that they produce is with small companies. Now, the definition with quite a lot of county councils is a small company is up to 250 employees. They don't seem to have micro.
Well, I think actually that, again, it's quite interesting if you go and look at Rotherham's website, because they actually do clearly define what they mean by small business, medium business and large business. Mm. And their definition of a small business, which curiously enough is the same definition the FSB uses, is one that employs less than 50 people. And I think there is a turnover figure there as well, but I can't off the top of my head remember it.
Mm. Yes, well, I've got, obviously, because I pulled off Suffolk, because that's my area, I pulled theirs off, and sort of the small one is contracts below 10,000 up to 50,000 with prior approval of the Director of Resource Management. The second level is 10,000 to 70,000 and then 70,000 above, or then EU threshold. Mm. Now, what does EU threshold mean, David?
Well, there are some specific thresholds that the EU defines at which point, because you're using public money, that you actually have to go in for a proper tender process as defined by the EU. But, I mean, let's face it, most of the businesses that we're talking about, the ones that we're fighting for, if you like, are businesses that wouldn't attempt to take on contracts that big anyway, by and large. Mm. We're talking about people that are looking for contracts probably less than £50,000, mostly. Mm-hmm. And I think both Ethne and Alan actually covered one of the key points, which is this concept of, well, I was going to say blame, but avoidance of risk. So if you actually have a tick box that says, does this organisation have a quality policy that meets ISO 9000 and whatever, and they've ticked that box, then they've done their part that said, if any of if there's ever any comeback, oh, yes, well, we ticked that box. Now, a lot of small businesses don't go through the process, as you say, but they do have quality control procedures. So in many cases, it would be far better to ask, do you have quality control procedures? But there's no, there would be comeback to that if there was a problem later on because you didn't employ somebody with ISO 9000 specification. And the same thing with regard to liability insurance. I mean, they set levels at a certain figure. More often than not, the small companies don't get that level as a standard insurance.
It seems as if the council are afraid of where the risk comes in. Is that what you're feeling?
What it should be about, in my view, is proportionate risk, you know, in the sense that, of course, clearly the council wants to protect itself, like any other client wants to protect itself against a negligent act on behalf of or by the people that it employs. And so they want to see that that organisation has the right liability insurances. And that's perfectly reasonable. What isn't reasonable is that when, and in my experience, of course, I'm talking about building construction, but when a building construction cost is £500,000, to require the architect to carry £10 million of professional indemnity insurance is an absolute nonsense. My negligence would have to be so great that not only would that building completely be destroyed, but several around it. And that's very unlikely to happen. So the risk, it hasn't been assessed. The level that they're requiring, they're looking at it and saying, well, 10 million, that'll be safe. But actually not understanding the impact that has on small firms. And I carry 5 million, which is in huge premiums. We're talking about 10,000 a year, which is half the salary of a technician who I might employ. Every year, to carry 5 million. So you can imagine what 10 million is going to be. And yes, of course, you know, if you've got a £60 million project, you might be looking at that. But then you're unlikely to destroy the whole building. And actually, if the whole building collapses, it's much more likely to be a discipline other than architects who are responsible. My negligence, if touch wood I've ever had any, you know.
I will say at this point, Alan is looking around
for some wood. you know, a roof leak or a door handle falling off is the more likely consequence. You know, you know, it's disproportionate, and the effect of it is profound in terms of excluding small firms. And given that most architectural practices are small. And by that, I mean micro businesses, really, because we're three or less, the vast majority. So by putting that criteria in, you immediately limit the scope of firms that you can attract to those big enough to carry that insurance.
Yes.
And most of them don't reside in Suffolk.
Well, yes, that's one of the things of Suffolk, is we are, as a county, you know, we have a huge amount of very small companies, micro companies, who are experts in their own way and are perfectly capable of doing the work. But it's actually getting that message across, which I think the Federation of Small Businesses and REBA have been trying to get across in particular, yes, to the local authority. Now, I know that sort of people listening to this might think, after this, I just don't want to touch it. But can we just do a bit on the positive side? Of if you do get the contract, is it something that then leads on to, once you're in, you're in? Or is it a case of one-off every time, Ethne?
I think that it's kind of early days for me. I know that with one of the contracts, they've already kind of reissued the whole, you know, the whole package again. And actually what's happened is it's gone much more down the bigger business route. So I'm fairly sure that that contract will end sort of around about September next year. With the other one, I suspect that it will be all right for a couple of years, which is the length of time that they told us originally. But I think it very much depends on the leader of the council, the chief exec, and which direction they're going in. And because, you know, if I talk about my sector, which is education, there's an awful lot of change at the sort of macro political level. Yeah. And so I think they're sometimes just waiting to see what happens. I think that's part of it. And I think that issues really both a threat and a challenge and opportunities as well to us. So I wouldn't like to assume that just because you've won one with them that you'll get another one. Right. So I think that you have to kind of keep your options open as much as possible. And I think what you can do, though, is you can get a good name for what it is that you do. But then what happens is, in my field, that the kind of bigger organisations then approach me because they've won one of these larger ones and they're looking for people like me with the track record of actually doing the work.
And the delivery.
Yes, to a high standard. They're looking for those people then because they've won the contract, but they don't necessarily have the people to do the work. So they have to then go out and find them. So very often I have these big multinational companies approaching me by various, you know, through various different networks because they're now looking for the people to actually do the work.
Yeah. No, that's quite interesting. Do you find that the same in architecture?
No, I think it's a bit different for us because, of course, some capital projects are... We would like them to be more one-off, quite honestly, because the problem we have is that frameworks, where local authorities roll up a whole lot of individual, what could be individual contracts into a framework, that takes it up to the level you mentioned, the OG thresholds. Well, Suffolk County, as an example, build very few projects that are more than 4.2 million, which I think the current threshold is, in construction value. In consultants' fees, the threshold is 170,000. Well, that's to be a fairly sizable project before the architect's fee is going to be £170,000. If they commissioned, the main range of projects that they tend to do are sort of in the £500,000 to £2 million sort of range, all of which firms like mine are more than capable of doing. We're doing them all the time, and bigger ones. But that's the sort of typical range, and the fees individually for the architects will always be below the threshold for those sorts of projects. So on that basis, there would be no need to go through OGU and have the very difficult process and criteria there. But because they roll up, so they put all their construction work into a framework that is then a multi-million pound framework.
That really
of
limits
course,
who can go
yes,
for it.
Yes, yes. I mean, a three-man practice in the outbacks of Suffolk is just going to be ruled out straight away. There is no possibility of them becoming a credible framework member. And that's, of course, why Suffolk County Council currently only has one Suffolk-based firm of architects on its framework.
But I will say, just in case anybody thinks that we have been a bit unfair, we have asked Suffolk County Council's procurement officers if they could put the representative here today for this, and they have declined. Now, from the Federation of Small Businesses' point of view, David, what can we do to get local authorities to actually think of either packaging smaller, which means that our small members can actually look for work within local authorities?
Well, I think that Ethne had it right, actually. I think we have to start at the top. So as far as, for example, Suffolk County Council is concerned, we have a pretty good relationship with Mark B, who is the leader, and we are developing a relationship with the new CEO, Deborah Cadman. And I think what we have to do is persuade them as to the advantages to the council and to the county of being able to do business with small business. And part of that is actually that the council are able, as I said right at the beginning, to measure what it is that they're doing. If they don't know how much business they're doing, then it's very difficult for them to say, well, we're going to do 10% more next year. And that's what we'd like them to commit to actually say, we're doing this much now, we will gradually increase it. And it will be for their benefit, and if they can monitor it, they will see that it's to their benefit. But they have to be able to do that accurately first, and that's probably the biggest hurdle we have to help them get over. And a lot of it is down to us being not so much critical, but actually offering solutions to say, well, if you did it this way, then it will work, and see it from our perspective, really.
And I think if you look at the model of Rotherham, then they have got a good starting point by the sounds of it.
Without a doubt.
You know.
I mean, there are positive signs. We did have an FSB breakfast a few months ago, which Deborah Cadman came along to, and I think she realised that this was probably one of the key issues as far as small businesses were concerned. And she suggested that we should have a similar breakfast with head of procurement there, Richard Hall, and give him his due. He turned up. He got a pretty hard time from some of the people there, but he listened, and that's the starting point, really. You can't change it overnight, and you've got to come up with some potential solutions for them. You can't just say, this is wrong, do something about it. It would be much better to say, well, it is wrong, but here's a suggestion as to something you might be able to do that would improve things.
And they are trying. They do have trying, as in trying to achieve, rather than
I didn't
trying.
Say anything.
Yes. Suffolk County Council offer actually free training for businesses. Now, their next course is run on the 26th of November. We will put their flyer in the booking form on the website for anybody who does want to go to that. So they are making an effort to try and encourage small businesses to go forward. Now, within county councils, I think some people should be aware that there's actually local authorities who do their own procurement slightly separate to the county councils. And this might be where people can actually start with the procurement officers at their local level. Obviously, sort of, you know, Suffolk has got 8 local authorities, and we're quite a large county, Suffolk, and we cover quite a wide geographical area. You know, they have put websites up where you can go on to find out what the tenders are, etc. And what we will do is we'll obviously put those links up for people to go on to. One of the things and I don't know whether you've all come across this, but whilst I've been doing a little bit of research, is there isn't one website to go on
to find out
these contracts.
That was a point I was going to make. I mean, I'm registered with 2 portals. One is for local authorities in the southeast, and one is for local authorities in London. And using their portals, it shows you a page where there's a picture of the British Isles, and all the regions are, you know, brightly coloured, and invites you to click on another region so that you can register.
Right.
And when you click on the eastern region, it just says web page not found. And in a way, it just speaks volumes
it
to
does.
Me. because when I asked, because I've got a good relationship with people in education in Suffolk, and I meet with them regularly to talk about the services we're offering, particularly the ones for more children, schools and family based. And they're very interested in working with us, or so they say, and certainly I meet with them regularly. When I ask the question about, well, you know, they've got some, you know, large contractors already providing some services. And when I've asked the question about, well, how do I find out when those tenders are coming up? And the reply was really that the last ones that they publicised were, you know, a page of the national press like The Guardian or The Times Educational Supplement. Well, really, that is a bit hit and miss if you're wanting local businesses.
Yes.
And individuals. You know, like if you're a big multinational, you've got people that just scan all of those kind of things, and they've got teams where
they
can.
Yeah, they have tending teams, yes.
You know, and really for small businesses, you know, that time to spend looking for, you know, in that kind of, you know, buried small print for possible tenders, really, it's not practical for them to find contracts in that kind of way. So I think it would be really helpful if there was an equivalent of what there is in London and South East and no doubt elsewhere here.
David?
I think the answer that we would get back, actually, if we pose that question, is that there is a portal, which is the Suffolk B2B portal, which is run by Suffolk Chamber. Interestingly enough, I actually have registered on that because my day job, as it were, is I'm a business coach. So I was looking to see whether I could do some business within Suffolk. The last notification I had from that portal was for a potential job in Aberdeen.
Yes.
I haven't yet had one in Suffolk.
No. I have the same problem. I'm also on that portal, and it's not generating many local opportunities at all.
Right. So there's definitely not a joined-up thinking, is there?
Not at all.
And that's something that possibly we can take forward to our county council. And Deborah is very, very amenable. She listens.
Yes.
And she does try to get results. So, you know, we can take that. But anybody listening to this who are not within, obviously, our county council and are finding difficulties, then I think, you know, your local county council CEO needs to know that the local authorities are not providing localism. You know, the localism bill is coming through. They are supposed to be looking at this. Yeah. And it seems to me as if they are missing a wonderful opportunity to have the resources that they can have on their doorstep, where they are not paying multinational prices for services that are required within the local remit.
Yes, I think that the message is not getting down to the people that actually make those purchasing decisions, because, for example, Suffolk County Council did run, they haven't run one this year, but they did run a Meet the Buyer event. Now, Meet the Buyer sounds like a good idea. You get together the various buyers from the councils, you put them in one room and you bring the businesses to them. When we ask the question, well, that's great, but how much business actually transpired from the last Meet the Buyer event? So far, we haven't been able to find any at all. Nothing. Zero.
So what was the purpose?
Well, the purpose is you tick the box that says we've had the Meet the Buyer event. The fact is that it hasn't done anything.
No.
Yeah, but there's a key point indicator somewhere.
Can I just add to that a bit? Because I think because, of course, the hurdles that prevent the businesses from getting that business haven't been removed. You can have as many events as you like, but unless you deal with the method of procurement and you actually open it up. And I think although quite right, you know, David, and representing the FSB, and we're in the context of Suffolk, so we're talking about Suffolk businesses and localism, and it is really important. And I think that they're missing a trick because they're not getting the commitment that you get. You know, if we're working on our own in our own area, we want to do a good job.
That's
you
right.
know, we really want to do a good job because we can't just walk away from that. So that is important. But I think it's also important to say that we're not saying that at least I'm certainly not saying that we're only interested in Suffolk businesses getting it. You know, we're not an exclusive sort of enclave.
No, but you want a fair.
It's more about
fair shot of the game.
Yeah, it's more about the size of the operations, I think, because actually, if you make it accessible, you make the work that the county council is procuring, you make the opportunity to provide that service or deliver those goods accessible to small firms, you will get local firms. I think that's the key. It's not about drawing geographical boundaries, although the information would be very interesting, I think, to know what proportion goes to Suffolk and so on. But it's actually, for me, the fundamental issue is the access to small businesses. And you talked about the definition of small businesses, and of course the government loves to talk about SMEs, which is up to 250 people. As an architectural practice, 250 people would be an absolutely massive national practice.
Yeah. Unrealistic. Yeah.
International practice, probably. Yeah, yeah, and certainly not normal.
Yeah, I just wanted to make two points from my experience, really, with other local authorities. And one is that one of the local authorities currently have a contract with, they actually give some preferential treatment to their local businesses. So if they win one of the contracts, they actually undertake to pay them within 10 working days.
Good grief.
Right. So that really is a commitment to the small people, isn't it?
It is, which, very much.
Because that sometimes is what prevents.
That would be very nice.
If small businesses know that they might have to wait, several months maybe sometimes to get the first payment. So that's the first thing. And I think the second thing is, when you get a large multinational company, and of course they have their place, I'm not, arguing that we don't need them. We need a good mix. But from my experience, and I have worked for those big multinational companies, what happens is that they will win the contract because they've got the people that have got the time to devote to the process. And then they go about finding people like me to do the work for them. And then what happens is I will be travelling. There's a bit of an absurdity here, isn't there? That I will be travelling really to other places as I am now, even though I've won those contracts myself. When actually I could be providing something in Suffolk, and having to write environmental impact policies, work elsewhere, but wouldn't it make sense in all kinds of ways to have
much more sustainable
work in my home county, one I'm committed to? My children were educated here. I've lived here now for a very long time. And really, it's my home county now. And I think it would be lovely if I could work here.
Yeah.
And of course, the not sustainable, not only in terms of mileage, but also economically, because the money that is paid to the firms like Ethne is also then being spent locally. Yeah. On things like children growing up and all of the family needs, it's actually quite self-sustaining, I think.
It is. Well, on that note, can I say thank you very much to Alan Wilkinson from WPP Architects Limited and a member of REBA Suffolk, to Ethne Lemming, who has Gemstones Education and Ethne Lemming Associates.
Thank you.
And to David Baker from the Federation of Small Businesses, and also from
Charting Success Limited.
That's it. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.